Amazon has everything for back to school. Zebra lunchbox? Check. Cool Adidas gear like t-shirts, shoes, and backpacks? Check. Triceratops folders and pencils? Check. Laser cat t-shirts? Check. Get your back-to-school shopping done now at Amazon.com/back-to-school and enjoy free shipping on millions of items. No need to leave your home or hassle with crowds. Amazon.com. No better place to get everything back to school from A to Z.
Straight out of Austin, Texas, it's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first on Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 96, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our good friends at Bud Light. Drink 'em if you got 'em. Sed Golden with the Duck, Kirk Bowles, and once again, this is starting to turn into a three-man operation.
He's like our most popular guest.
I think he has taken the lead in most guest appearances. Yeah. Danny Davis is here. And Danny, riveting spring game. And I know you just couldn't wait to share some of your observations. But before I get to yours, gotta ask. The Brian Davis.
Start with that.
I mean, it was fun. It was the most interesting thing about the spring game was Tom Herman not being happy with Brian Davis's line of questioning about goal line offense. What did y'all think about that? Danny, you first.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
You go to TexasSports.com. That exchange never happened.
Exactly. They edited it out of the video. Can you believe that?
Well, Tom Herman bristled when Brian asked about a fumble on the first running play by Tony O'Carter, and then the lack of power at the goal line when they needed a wide receiver to score. So both legitimate concerns. Carter's a fumbler, and two, they've been a soft team that can't score inside the five.
Well, they've been in 11 personnel all spring, Kirk.
Excuse me? Okay, Mr. Football 101.
He didn't have his goal line offense in there.
He didn't want to show it, right?
He didn't want to put it on film that you're going to bring in some fat guys to block at the one-yard line. Yeah. Nobody thinks that's going to happen.
Who would do a thing like that?
I really think, you know, and I know we make light of it. And Tom, to his credit, apologized to Brian. But Tom's got to be a little bit smarter than that. I knew he wears his heart on his sleeve. Personally, I thought this was the Tom that we were going to see last year. You know, as a new coach,
to blow up,
and he was so smart to pull back on those moments where he thought he might lose his temper. But this time, I think he might because he's got a 7-6 on his record. He's got a winning season. He broke the Charlie Strong streak.
Wait a minute. You're not going to say he's got swag now because he won seven games.
He's always had a little bit of swag, but I think he's starting to feel a little bit more secure in who he is. Money being spent, $140 million project is on the table to expand the south end of the stadium. New lockers, great recruiting classes,
and then Brian Davis
asked about a goal line offense.
Well, I want to know, Danny, what was the most impressive thing you saw out of the Saturday spring game?
Well, I mean, if we checked your Twitter last week, we had a little poll going about the most interesting or the best Longhorn coming up this year.
That would might
year.
Be old Big 12, yes.
Your guy was Lil Jordan, and my guy was Colin Johnson, and
that's a wash.
Maybe a wash after that first game.
Might have been a wash.
Those two receivers are really impressive, and the fact that they were playing on opposite teams, I think, is going to have some offensive staff members over there, you know, up late nights is thinking about the possibilities of those two being on the same sideline. So, I mean, those two both played really well. We'll see if that translates into something during the fall. I think last spring game, Reggie Himpomaps was kind of the, breakout of that game, and that led to some up and down, but some very good moments during the season. We'll see if that happens with Lil Jordan, who, was solid last year, but wasn't really great. He wasn't a superstar.
He was their lead receiver, by any means, but break out.
And then Colin, we saw what he could do in the USC game, and we'll see if that can happen. But defense was good; those receivers were good. Obviously, the quarterbacks were, running backs were, and they actually made a 50-yard field goal, so that was something.
How do you spell that in the headline?
So we'll see. I mean, there's some things to be excited about if you're a Longhorn fan, but for the most part, he's kind of got to shrug your shoulders and wait till September comes.
Sid, what impressed you about anything you saw?
The first thing that I've got to point out is that Colin Johnson, Lil Jordan was all over the place, and he was easily the best player on the field.
I agree.
That day, but Colin Johnson, there are just some times where you go, man, that guy could really be special. He makes some of these spectacular.
He's got some raw weaves catching in him.
Yeah, and he's got big hands, and he gets his hands on the ball, and he's got great feet for a big guy. He's listed as 6'6", probably like 6'5". But I'm telling you, I just think if they get those two guys going, and they got enough deep threats. I mean, Duvernay's fat, John Burt. They've got enough deep threats. They're going to need to open it up. Can these quarterbacks get them the ball? That is my biggest concern of this whole thing. In college football, very few teams can win big with average quarterbacking. And Texas quarterbacks right now, to me, are average. They are not special.
I agree with you. But before we completely leave the wide receivers, do you two think they play too many receivers? Because they'll have seven or eight in their rotation. Is that a mistake, playing too many?
Yeah, I said that last year. And I know people are out there going to go, boy, you know, when you can't run 50. You can't have 50 or 60
plays.
That's
what Tom says.
You know what? He says that. But I grew up watching the run and shoot, and the Houston Oilers had four guys, and they played every play,
all four of them. Danny, do you think it's too big a rotation?
I don't. This year, I don't think so. I mean, last year I think they had probably too many cooks in the kitchen, but you also had, you know, Armonte there. You had Lorenzo Joe. You had Dorian Leonard. You had Reggie Hempel-Mapps. I mean, but those guys are all gone.
Yeah.
And so now, I mean, Colin, I think, is established at his position. I mean, at the slot, you do have Jerod and Lil Jordan who are going to be arguing or, you know, battling for positions, for playing time. And then you kind of got Duvernay and John Bird at that other outside receiver slot. So, I mean, unless a Jordan Pouncey or a Brendan Eagles, you know, kind of forces the issue, I think you have five solid guys who can kind of, and I think that's good for a
like
team, for an offense.
I don't like eight or nine. Because remember, we discussed this
receivers
last year. You're talking about
how deep I know
this core is. I go, it can be too deep.
Yeah, I agree.
You got guys over there standing around for three or four series wondering if their number's going to be called. Remember, John Burt went away for like six games.
Oh, he did. And so Duvernay. Duvernay would catch one ball a game, and that'd be it.
So yeah, I like what they have here. They're gonna really have to lean on these receivers.
I
really hope, you know, and we want Texas to do well because it's an easier beat to cover and fans are more excited.
Nobody likes a 6-16.
No one wants to be around a mediocre team. Yeah. I really hope in my heart of hearts that Keontae Ingram from Carthage, the dynamic high school Under Armour All American, is as good as advertised, because I just don't know that Daniel Young or Kirk Johnson or Tristan Houston.
Yeah, I think you do know.
Or Toneil Carter. I think I do know. Those guys are not special. I wrote that. They're not special.
They're not.
They work hard. They're going to have a role, but they need a game breaker type.
And Tom Herman and his staff know that. I mean, have you seen Ingram play, Danny?
I mean, aside from some stuff on, you know, TV and, you know, the occasional huddle film, I'm not as high on him as a lot of other people are, just because the kid's a true freshman who's not going to be on campus till the summer.
And you never know what you're going to get out of a freshman. You know,
but it's easier for running backs, would you not agree?
In some aspects it is too, but I mean, you know, he's never pass blocked at a collegiate level.
True.
He hasn't learned a lot of the schemes he's going to need to. I mean, it took, you know, I've said this before, but Danny Young, he was nothing for the first month of the season because he wasn't here until the summer, and, you know, he had to learn how to block, and he needed to learn how to play at a collegiate level. So, I mean, I think everyone's kind of excited to see what Keontae can do, but I think it's also a little unfair to, you know, put these expectations on him, because it's going to take him a while to adapt, and especially since he didn't go through spring ball, and, you know, he's going to be running behind the same offensive line that these running backs currently are, and that's another issue. So,
and you know what, Danny? Hate to say it, but they've had great runners come in here and not get it done.
Malcolm Brown,
Jonathan Gray.
Yeah, five-star guys.
Those guys were national top
five-star
20 recruits, and neither one of them had a 1,000-yard season at Texas.
I mean, didn't Jonathan Gray, was it him or Brown, had 100 touchdowns in high school?
That was Jonathan Gray at Aledo.
Yeah.
He was a god.
And here he was good. He had his moments, wasn't like J.K. Dobbins and LaGrange kid at Iowa State. And I'm not saying Ingram has to be that, but I think we've seen enough of Carter and Daniel Young and Kyle Porter to think, well, they're not dynamic.
But to be fair, I mean, J.K. Dobbins plays on a much better team than any of those running backs would. And, you know,
maybe good on any team, though.
He's not. He's maybe, you know, you put Tenille Carter, Danny Young on Ohio State, they're probably not producing J.K. Dobbins' numbers, but they're probably producing better numbers because that's a better offensive line, that's a better offense. You know, Ohio State has a quarterback you have to respect, and that stuff just isn't happening at Texas. And if J.K. had come to Texas, I don't think he would be J.K. Dobbins had he come to Texas instead of Ohio State, because this is just not as good of an offense. And, you know, a lot – you know, there's just a step down here as opposed to what was going on at Ohio State last year.
That's a good point.
And it should be mentioned that they'd kill for a Jonathan Gray or Malcolm Brown on this team.
Yeah, they would.
They would. They'd kill. I mean, Malcolm Brown's an NFL running back.
Right.
He may not have gotten it done here as well as he had hoped, but he's an NFL running back who's making a nice living.
Instead, you touched on the quarterback. We're always going to start the conversation with that. If Shane Buechele hits John Burt twice – on those deep routes, we might be talking about John Burt this week. That, boy, they've got three dynamic explosives. And that was on Buechele, not Burt, who was open. So they don't have an elite quarterback. I thought the two freshmen, you know, Casey Thompson, Cameron Rising, athletic, showed some promise, but they're not going to be ready. Do you see any difference in Shane Buechele or Sam Ehlinger that either one, if they could be an elite quarterback, Danny?
I mean, we'll have to see. I mean, I know when he at one point last week when we were talking to the coordinators, Tim Beck said that Sam had made a lot of strides with his decision making, and it's like, that's cute. It's spring ball.
That's really cute.
Let's wait till there's 80,000 people screaming at you and there's a minute to go and you're trying to drive down the field. So, I mean, Sam's biggest problem was his decision. Shane is not the explosive person, and we'll see what happens when he's not wearing a black jersey and the opposing teams can't murder him on a blitz. And, I mean, we're just going to have to see. I mean, you'd expect as they grow and mature and, you know, get another year in the system and get another year with their teammates and their coaches that some things are going to improve. But at the same time, we're just not going to know until, you know, we see them against Maryland.
Well,
and you know what? The thing that gets me is Tim Beck is bragging on Sam. You know, he's making a lot better decisions.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He's growing. He's maturing. And then you get Tom Herman after the spring. I want him to gamble. I want him to fit it in there. Yeah. Take some chances. I was like, man, it's got to be tough on these two quarterbacks. What do I do? I don't want to throw an interception, but I got my head coach, who's the boss, telling me to be more of a risk taker.
I'm going to listen to Herman before I'm going to listen to Beck.
I think I am too. You know. But yeah, it's kind of a strange dynamic, though. I wonder if he's telling Tim Beck to encourage his guys to gamble more.
In the spring, and he reiterated the spring. And like Danny said, he's shown better decision making. That is cute. It is in the spring. The other point I would make alongside that is that shouldn't they wow us in the spring? Shouldn't they be? There's no pass rush per se. They're not going to get hit. Interception, it's not on your record. It's not going to cost you anything. Shouldn't we be so impressed? Boy, they look so good in the spring.
It's supposed to be an offensive showcase, Doug,
but
and it wasn't.
It wasn't.
I went to the A&M spring game and with the Diva, and it was an offensive showcase.
Well, you know,
both both those quarterbacks were spinning the ball, and that
Mon
tight end Starnberger,
good.
Starnberger, the tight end, was looked like Jason Witten running downfield. So those Aggie fans walked out of there going, man, we're going to have a little bit of offense.
They might be a dark horse
SEC. They may be a dark horse. They upgraded their coaching, their head coaching, and so I didn't get that same feeling leaving DKR. I think I think Tom said he felt a lot better about the run game than he did in December, but I saw nothing from that run game that would make me think, they're going to average 4.5 yards a carry.
I'm not buying that. So before we leave football and get into baseball a little bit, I know it's early, but it's always fun. Fans want to know, what's our record going to be? Did you see enough to think this is the team that can contend for something big and win 10, 11 games?
I did not.
I just don't see, unless you're looking at the fact that the conference is going to be down, I just don't know how you look at this team and say, this team is better than the team they had last year. Like, I just do not.
I thought it looked the same.
I don't buy that argument. I mean, maybe they can win a couple more games because Baker's not at Oklahoma, and Kyler may not be at Oklahoma either. And, Oklahoma State's going to take a step back with their quarterback play, but I just don't I don't think this team is better than what it is. And if you want to take stock on what's going to happen in the draft this week, and all the names are going to be no longer on this team, and they're going to be playing, you know, football on Sundays now, I mean, you can make an argument that they're going to take a step backwards.
I'm sure a lot of good players.
I'm sharing a brain with my twin. No Deshaun Elliott, no Malik Jefferson, no Puna Ford,
no Holton Hill.
No Connor Williams. No Michael Dixon.
Oh, you mean the bowl MVP?
Yeah, he's gone? The best player on the team.
Yeah.
You're telling me they're going to be better without those guys?
I don't know.
I would just have to say no. And like Danny said, unless those other teams take a step back because you're losing a Mason Rudolph, you're losing a Baker Mayfield, if those guys take a step back and Texas's defense is as good as we think it's going to be, they're going to have to win a lot of 24-17 games. And that's not the usual modus operandi of Big 12 games on Saturday afternoons. Yeah. You got to get to 40 to get a W.
Yeah, I think they can contend for the Big 12 because I think the league is down. All the great quarterbacks are gone except for Will Grier. And I think their defense is going to be outstanding again. I'm still a little leery on the front four, but I like their linebackers a lot, and I think the secondary is just building, going to get better and better with the Chris Boyd, Brandon Jones, and P.J. Locks, and these freshmen.
B.J. Foster. B.J. Foster looked good.
Yeah, I like B.J. Foster.
Kobe Boyce had his moments.
Yeah.
Kobe Boyce, that kid, I just felt bad for him.
He had to cover Colin Johnson all day.
He played really well and was playing really good defense. He just happened to be against Colin Johnson, who was playing out of his mind.
And that's going
to
help Kobe moving forward.
Yeah, I think secondary could be the best position, you know, on the Longhorns.
We said that last year.
Yeah, we did. So anyway, let's switch to baseball. Texas at West Virginia. They're still right near the top at the Big 12 at this stage, and they've got three series left. At West Virginia, at Texas Tech a week from now, and then hosting a bad TCU team.
Your boy Schloss.
Is Texas the best team in the Big 12 in baseball, Danny?
I'm not going to say that because Tech, I think, is a top five team right now and took care of business the last couple weeks against Kansas State, killed Kansas State, and then took two or three against Oklahoma. And Texas has the potential. I mean, if their pitchers live up to what we've been expecting their pitchers to be all year, I mean, they can, pitch with the best of them, and their offense has been playing better. But, they've also sometimes has had some moments where you're pounding your head against a wall wondering what the heck is going on with this team. And, that definitely could come up against a better team. You kind of look at Texas's resume and you look for that, like, marquee win or that one moment that's like, this is the, this is a Big 12 champion team, or this is a team that's bound for Omaha. And it's really tough to find that moment. They have won once at LSU. They've had a couple nice wins here or there, ULL at the beginning of the season, and some nice wins, beating Oklahoma two or three in Norman. But that one marquee win is they lost 3 or 4 to Stanford. They got killed at Arkansas. They had some slip ups here and there, losing at A&M. So I mean, you're kind of looking for that moment. It's too tough. That's why I just can't say they're the best team in the Big 12. But they get a chance to prove it in a week.
You're right, and it's all about peaking and playing at the right time. And this is about the time you really want to be, heading toward that peak. And a lot of it goes down to that iffy rotation. I mean, Nolan Kingham hadn't been the All-American candidate, if you will, or even the ace of the staff. And, Chase Sugar's been up and down. Bo Ridgeway's just kind of gone away. How would you describe their pitching rotation and what's going on with Ridgeway right now as a closer?
I mean,
former closer.
Ridgeway's not the closer anymore.
Andy McGuire, I guess, is the closer, yeah.
That is an interesting thing. He didn't pitch at all during their 6 non-conference games, which would have been kind of the time
to try to straighten him out.
Try to get some confidence in there. So it'll be interesting to see, what his role is going forward. The rotation's just, Nolan has not been what people expected him to be, especially after, he started the game. He looked brilliant against ULL and has had some other moments throughout the year. But these last month, whether it's the back-to-back two-inning starts, the benching, going to Oklahoma, which he then turned around and looked great out of the bullpen in that second game. Last week, against New Orleans, had a bad first inning, bad seventh inning. Between that, looked really, really good. So, I mean, he's had up and down. They need to get him straightened out, and if they can get him to be what we expected Nolan Kingham to be, I mean, that's a good place to start. Chase Sugart, he's doing the best he can. I mean, I don't think people expected him to be, the second coming to Morgan Cooper, coming out of the bullpen like he did last year. But he's had some moments. Looked really good a couple weeks ago against Baylor when he started calling his own pitches. And So he's a possibility. And then Blair Henley, you know, another guy who's been up and down, who's looked good at time, you know, bad at times. But, you know, those are the three they've got. Those are the three that they're going to roll into the postseason with, because they don't really have a number four or number five. So, you know, they need those guys to step up. And, you know, the one good thing this year is they found some nice stories out of the bullpen with, you know, Andy McGuire closing, Josh Sawyer coming back from injuries, and Parker Joe Robinson kind of developing into a good relief option.
Well, Danny, the late great Augie Garrido always told me when I was on this beat that you got to go into tournament play with four. You got to have four starting pitchers, because you never know what's going to happen.
The three would be nice.
You mentioned those three. If there's a four, who would it be in a tournament situation?
I mean, that's the tough thing. I mean, Nico O'Donnell has gotten some. I think he's had seven starts. On midweek games, but he's also, I think, gone five innings once and got lit up at Texas A&M a couple weeks ago. And so he pitched actually pretty good out of the bullpen against Houston on Tuesday this week. So maybe he's found some confidence. Cam Fields, they like him, but once again, I don't know if he's a guy that can go five, six innings. He's never been extended that much. And so, Matteo Bocchi, the kid they got from, the kid who's from Italy, who was at, I think, Hale College or Range. Well, he's at one of those JUCOs last year. Maybe he's an option. So, I mean, they have some options. I don't think you can say you feel incredibly confident. I mean, last year, it just kind of shows how absurd last year was when you have Nick Kennedy and Kyle Johnson as kind of your throw-in number four or five, and those guys are top 10 round draft picks, and they were, you know, at sometimes just kind of just chilling in the middle of the week, middle of the week for Texas.
It's
so.
An unusual team. It's a much better offensive team. Cody Clemens killing it. He's on all the watch lists, and Mason Hibler, I'm a big fan of his. So it's just a very different Texas team. But for now, they're getting it done. Let's hope it continues.
Danny Davis, thank you so much for joining us. You are a de facto member, staff member of On Second Thought. We love it when you come in and hit for us. Thank you, sir. We will talk to you soon.
I guess that's what I get for always being around in the office.
That'll teach you.
Later. Duck Danny Davis, as usual, coming strong, low-key but hot takes by Daniel. I kind of like what he brought to the party today.
He knows his beats.
He knows a little bit.
He's knowledgeable.
He knows enough to be dangerous. It's like all of us.
He's got some knowledge to share.
Yeah, he does. Well, you know, speaking of knowledge, yes. Greg Popovich, the San Antonio Spurs, the season ended Wednesday night, 99-91 loss to the Golden State Warriors. First of all, it was vintage Spurs. No Popovich, no Kawhi, no quit in the San Antonio Spurs. That's what makes this organization one of the best run in sports. The most professional effort every night, night in, night out.
Absolutely. I would not disagree with anything you said, and that's unusual. I just love watching that. I mean, they just quietly, steadily, methodically stayed in the game, played well, played strong as they could, and they were a very limited team.
They really are.
Rudy Gay didn't do anything offensively. Danny Green didn't do anything the entire series offensively. Now, he did have to chase Klay Thompson for five games, and that takes its toll, but you know, DeJounte Murray, I was not impressed with his game.
He's not ready quite yet.
Patty Mills played great in game five, and Manu was steady, and LaMarcus, he was gangbusters, but they just didn't have enough weapons.
And you can't win an NBA title with one alpha dog.
No way.
Not in the way the game's made up today. You cannot. You can't go in and be like Hakeem Olajuwon was 25 years ago when he put the Rockets on his back for back-to-back titles. I mean, that's the exception and not the norm.
I got a question for you. If Golden State hadn't been playing San Antonio, say they'd been playing a Minnesota or a New Orleans or a Utah, would they have been in trouble the first round?
I don't think so, because they do such a good job of making big shots, and they spread it around. Even when Kevin Durant was struggling on Tuesday night, he Klay Thompson picked it up. Draymond hit a couple of timely threes.
JaVale McGee had a strong series.
I do worry about them moving forward. New Orleans is an interesting study. Remember I just said
you
got to have at least two alpha dogs? They have to.
Hey, Rondo revisited.
Yes.
These shades of his
Rondo
old self.
Is running the show. Anthony Davis, the brow, is playing great. And Drew Holiday, 1 year removed from his wife beating an illness, is playing some great basketball. They're not going to be afraid of Golden State.
Not at all.
They're going to be well-rested. They took Portland out in quick order, and I think it's going to be a 6 or 7 game series.
I could see that. I think America is being introduced to Holiday, and they're a feisty bunch. And it's kind of exciting. I kind of like these new young teams like the Pelicans or the 76ers or the Timberwolves who are kind of feisty and they're not intimidated.
Get some new energy.
They're not intimidated, and it's not the same old boring playoff like, all right, what time is it? When's Cleveland Golden State going to play? But it's fun watching some of these new teams.
You know what? But let's get back to those Spurs.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, dog, it's the end of an era. I think Tony Parker is not coming back. I don't know if he's going to take less money, but he may. He's not coming back for $15
million. He's got a lot of pride.
That.
Who else would he get money from like that?
No one. No one's
I don't
gonna,
think so either.
No one's going to give a 34-year-old point guard that's
He didn't play many minutes in Game 5.
Definitely on the downside.
Yeah.
You're not
going to
give him $15 million. So Manu Ginobili has a year left.
He could come
back.
And
he looks like he could still be
really
good situational type player.
Off the bench.
Kind of what D-Wade is doing in Miami now. He's got a decision to make. So the big one is Pop. 69,
and Kawhi.
69, yeah. Those two inexorably linked. Pop, 69 years old, and I'm sure a lot of it is dependent on if Kawhi Leonard can get it straightened out with his team. If you ask me today, I just don't know that R.C. Buford's going to hand him $219 million.
Why would you?
I don't know, because
I wouldn't.
The Spurs were built on loyalty, and I really don't believe that they think that Kawhi has put the team first.
Well, you're right.
And I think he's being perceived in some circles down there as a selfish, passive-aggressive malcontent. And that's a tough label to shred.
And whether it's Kawhi Leonard himself, whether it's his group led
it's
by
all
his
the
uncle,
same. It's, same,
it's
all the same.
It's the same thing, absolutely, that they're not going to differentiate between who's behind all this. All they know is that Kawhi Leonard, an MVP candidate, played 9 games, offered very little information in terms of, you know, his injury and why he can't play when Tony Parker has a ruptured quad and he comes back in, what was he, December?
Yeah,
was he back?
And he's almost, and he's like 8 years older
yeah.
than Kawhi.
So you wouldn't think Kawhi Leonard would be a guy holding the franchise hostage, but you know, we've been writing and thinking, oh, that window's closing. You know, we've kind of thought that for, seems like 8 years. But now, with Parker and Manu either at the end or near the end, with Kawhi Leonard's situation being so murky, with Popovich, 69, he's coach of the USA men's national team with the Olympics in 2 years, but it actually starts next year, so I don't know. It's going to be really interesting how that roster takes shape next year. Now, LaMarcus looks like a superstar now.
And he's 33 years old, so he's probably got like 2 or 3 really good 2010 type years left.
Yeah, he showed me a lot this
year. He showed you some sack.
And Rudy Gay, too.
Yes.
Played strong, but like Danny Green, you know, he's not the offensive threat he was. Patty Mills isn't a starting point guard, bless his heart. But he'd be good coming off the bench. So, boy, is enough there for them to be a credible threat in the West?
If they bring Kawhi back, yes. Kawhi and LaMarcus, and you surround them with 3 blind mice, and they're going to make the playoffs.
But you know what? If I'm the Spurs management right here today, you know, toward the end of April, I would try to trade him. You know, do a signing trade with somebody and let somebody else run that risk. Because if this is, you know, irreparably damaged and torn, you're sitting here maybe coming back with LaMarcus Aldridge and a bunch of spare parts.
And your guys may be retired too.
Yeah.
No Parker, no Manu.
No.
That hurts the leadership in the locker room.
Paul George didn't come into San Antonio.
Mm-mm. He's going to L.A. or
LeBron's not coming to San Antonio. Nope. You
got to get the right type of guy who's willing to play in a small market. LaMarcus had his best years in Portland.
Yeah.
That's a small NBA market.
Yeah.
And so San Antonio was a fit for him, being from Texas and all. But you get the feeling that Kawhi's people may be pushing him toward a bigger market, which is probably the most non-Kawhi thing ever.
It really is. It really
strange.
Is. He's a guy that does not embrace the media. He's not embraced social media. You don't see him on endorsements. He just wants to play basketball. So it's just so much there that people don't know. And quite frankly, this could be the end of an era, both from San Antonio and Cleveland. You know, with LeBron poised to probably leave, really is an interesting time.
So tired of him leaving every 3 years. Can you just get somewhere and sit down? You're arguably the second best basketball player to ever lace up some sneakers,
mm-hmm.
and you keep your dang luggage packed. Every 3 years, you're heading out. I'm glad you came back home and won a championship with Cleveland, but you can't just retire there, LeBron.
You still think you'll be with the Lakers and Chris Paul, don't you?
Yes, I do. Yes,
I think Chris Paul stays in Houston.
And you think Houston wins a championship?
No, you do. I pick Golden State.
So you think Houston doesn't even make it to the finals,
right.
And Chris Paul comes back?
Make it to the Final Four, and he does come back.
Well, we'll see about
that. He seems happy in Houston.
Well, okay, well, before we go, I want to ask you this. All right, if you're R.C. Buford, and the checkbook's out in front of you, do you write a $219 million check to Kawhi Leonard with a promise that he's going to be a solid citizen, or do you actively pursue a trade?
I actively pursue a trade. I just don't think you can count on him. I don't know if he's reliable anymore. And even if he says, I'm going to be a good citizen, I'm going to play hard, you know, that was all my uncle, my entourage, that's not me. What guarantee do you have that next year could be any different than this year?
That's true.
So I would try to sign and trade. I don't know what you'd get. You're not going to get true value for a Kawhi Leonard, but I think you're doing diligent work on behalf of the Spurs and doing the best of a bad situation.
Well, the Spurs season is over, but ours is not. We will be all over these playoffs. Things are heating up in the association. Check out our stuff, and we will be discussing it more fully in future podcasts. Kirk, they had a college basketball commission meeting in Indianapolis. And my God, they came up with manna from the heavens. Listen to this, dog. Ban all cheats and get rid of the one and done. Oh, my God, these people are just so far ahead of the curb.
I
never would have guessed that was going to come out of the meetings. I had no idea what they were going to discuss.
You're being sarcastic.
This is very enlightening, yes. Very enlightening.
Ban the cheaters for life. Okay, well, shouldn't they always ban the cheaters for life?
If they ban the cheaters for life, will they have to shut down the city of Chapel Hill, North Carolina? That's the question.
They barely slapped them on the wrist for their academic scandal that went on for decades.
But was it Rutgers that they destroyed, though?
Oh, yeah, boy, that's serious
stuff,
man.
Got to get Rutgers out of there.
You got to get Rutgers in line, the future home of Jacob Young. But yeah, I was not blown away by this commission, chaired by the former Secretary of State. You know, everybody knows cheating is widespread in college basketball. And the one-and-done rule, you can stomp your feet and hold your breath all you want. That's an NBA Players Association, an NBA agreement. I do think it will expire because I think the NBA wants it to expire. But you know, you never find these coaches that you ban for life because they're always going to claim no knowledge of the situation.
Oh, God, it's called plausible deniability.
I had no idea he was doing this.
I had a bag, man.
Really?
Are you serious?
That's, you know. So,
that goes all the way back to John Wooden, dog.
So, you know,
even John Wooden had a bag, man.
They wanted to open up the NCAA Board of Governors to outside membership. The commission said they would like to add 5 independent positions on the NCAA board. Well, whoop-de-doo. What does that do? You know, I don't get that. To me, the only thing that was really, don't know, maybe had a little bit of teeth to it, was allowing players to return to college if they put their name in the draft and don't get selected. Now, I think that protects the players. However, do the coaches at their college keep their scholarships open? And then they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. Are you coming back? Are you not coming back? Do you just have to one keep one? Or what if you're a Duke or Kentucky? You got to keep four spots open? I don't know how realistic that is.
You know what? And that's, to me, that's a personal problem for the colleges. If you got, like, let's take Isaiah Taylor, for instance, Texas. He declares he's leaving. He gets an agent. He doesn't get drafted. Meanwhile, Shaka Smart has to fill a roster for
right,
the next season.
Sure.
And he's got to find another point guard. And
people at his position, you know.
So they're going to have to probably move around some signing day dates and what have you if that passes. I think that's an interesting rule. I like the fact that a kid could maybe get some bad advice from an agent, not get drafted, and still go back to college. I think that's a cool idea.
I do too, but maybe they need to add a scholarship or two. But what that'll do, that just means the rosters for North Carolina and Duke, Kansas, Kentucky will be expanded, and some really good players will go and sit the bench on their rosters as opposed to going somewhere else. So I'm not sure how realistic that is. As far as the one and done, you know, here's a question I have, Cedric. All right, if the NBA abolishes one and done, which I think they will do this summer or before next college season, and high school players, you know, that are under 19 can still go to directly to the NBA, like Kobe and Kevin Garnett and some kid named LeBron. Don't know what happened to him. Would you like to see that baseball rule where, okay, you can go straight from high school to the NBA, you go to college, you've got to stay 3 years like baseball. Would you like to see that implemented?
I wouldn't mind seeing it 2 years implemented. I would love for three because that improves the college game, and we love us some college basketball. I think two would be fine because that at least that way most of the kids are 19 or 20, and they've done their 2 years in college, and it's not like football, Duck, where you got to physically grow into a man to compete against 20 like other grown men. Basketball is not as physically destructive to a body. I mean, if you play basketball 3 or 4 days a week, you're going to be in great shape later on in life. Football, not so much. So I would hope that they would at least make it 2 years. I would prefer three because I think that would improve the college game, and it would also get these kids more ready for the NBA. So and I know the one-and-done rule was built in part because of Kobe and LeBron sure. and KG, guys like that. And we know that Kevin Durant never would have stepped foot in Austin, Texas, if not have been for this requirement.
Austin?
Yeah, he was here. He had 2 cups of coffee.
2 cups of coffee.
And
okay.
then he gave millions of dollars to
had
the facility.
Yes,
yes,
he did.
So I'm liking the fact that they're going to get rid of one-and-done.
Okay, here's
But I do like what you just said, the baseball rule. I've always liked the baseball rule.
I do, too.
Because when those guys are ready for the pros, they're men. They come here as boys in 3 years of college, even if you're not always going to class, and we know that there's some of that mm-hmm. going on. It's an intellectual boon, and it improves a person, and you get to be on a college campus for 3 years. I think that's important for development.
I like that, too, but they're different sports. You and I both know that, you know. Kids don't go from high school to the major leagues. You know, there are a few Bryce Harpers and people like that that don't stay in the minors very long. But there's different sports, obviously. So I guess what I'm asking, do you hold the basketball players in college against their will? I'd like to see it 3 years. I mean, selfishly, I love the college game. I'd love them to stay 4 years or 5 years. But you know, it's about the players and the athletes first. So are you holding them against their will? And is that wrong on the face when you say they've got to stay 2 years, like you said, or even worse, for their standpoint, 3 years?
Well, no one's twisting their arms and saying, come to college.
Well, they are right now because you can't go straight to the NBA.
You can go to the G League if you're good enough. You can go to the G League.
Yeah, but if you're there aren't good that many spots.
And if you're good enough, you can go to Europe and make a good living. So what was that point guard's name? Brandon Jennings went to Italy instead of mm-hmm. college. He decided, I'm going to go to Italy.
How about the ball kids?
Yeah, so, you know. Awful.
Yeah, well, let's don't
That's
go there.
Just a nightmare. That's a nightmare. But I understand the holding them hostage argument. But if you're good enough to go straight out of high school, that's going to be readily apparent.
And they're going to be 5 to 6 to 7 at most, don't you think?
Yeah, and in America, not counting the foreigners, yes.
Right.
And so the only way to better the college game, I think, is to get rid of the one and done, because there's only going to be a handful of guys anyway.
Sure.
And so and open up those spots for program guys. Did you notice that Villanova won a national title with program guys?
Yes, they did.
Sophomores, juniors, and seniors. It happens. Duke made a run with juniors and seniors.
Well, their whole roster's gone to the NBA now.
Yeah, and so the good teams always have a great mix.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have those mid majors, UMBC, bunch of juniors and seniors. Guys that probably aren't going to be in the NBA, but guys that stayed in college for more than 6 months and figured out that if we play together, good things can happen. So there are arguments on both sides of it. The only one I like is to ban the cheats, but the NCAA is just so hypocritical, though. The biggest program, one of the biggest programs in the history of the sport, is dirty academically. And there's nothing, no message has been sent to deter North Carolina from cheating in class. We all know that most players get paid. Let's not even pretend that's not happening. But the blatant academic fraud committed by Carolina and the soft slaps on the wrist by the NCAA, Duck, pretty laughable.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about agents. The commission also had a recommendation that athletes be permitted to retain agency representation while in high school, as long as all that's disclosed and out front. Now, they did not address athletes getting, quote, loans from these agents. Not that they would ever do that.
You think Eric Davis paid his back yet? Yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, what do you think on agents? Is that it's hard to get your hands around that issue.
I'm going to tell you, that's a nightmare waiting to happen. And I'm going to tell you why, Doug. When you look at AAU basketball, when you look at what they call Olympic development type sports, it is a $1 billion industry. These are volleyball camps, these basketball leagues. Everybody thinks their kid is going to be in the NBA.
And it's the age of specialization.
Can you imagine all these parents going, we got to get little Kirk Jr. an agent. He averages 13 points a game for Whispering Rock High School. Oh, he's a beast.
He's
great.
Sweet J.
He's a monster out there. Let's get him an agent.
What could go wrong?
And this agent's going to show up and go, well, I know he's not getting paid to play yet, but I'll tell you what I'll do. Okay, you work at Dell, man, and ma'am, you're a college prof at Texas. What I'll do is I'll take 10%. Of your earnings, and then when your kid signs his pro contract, then I'll reimburse you. But if he doesn't make it to the pros, then you know, we had our great effort.
All bets are
that
off.
That is a bad idea.
But it says here they want to certify these agents. So
because that makes them a lot more
everything would be
honest.
Ethical.
Everything's going to be on the table.
Exactly.
What's in that?
Why are you so cynical?
But what's in that shoebox that's under the table? That's my question. That's a bad idea, man. You can't do that.
A very sophomoric idea, I think. Okay, the last thing I want to bring up with the commission is they didn't touch the old image and likeness provision.
You know
for
why?
Athletes, yeah, they don't want to.
It's such a steal. The athletes are getting worked on that thing, and nobody wants to get sued. Ed O'Bannon did his lawsuit, but Ed O'Bannon went away, didn't he?
Well, those lawsuits are lingering.
Still, yeah, but there are no settlements.
But you know it's going to happen. They're going to win that case.
So.
I think it's inevitable that it's going to happen. You know, I go back to, you know, the Olympic model where, you know, businesses or corporations could sponsor these athletes in college and the schools would not be out any money. And short of agents paying these athletes, you know, I even broached the subject to you over lunch, is that what about you or me? You want to pay a kid to go to UT Tyler? I want to pay a kid to go to UT Austin and be a Longhorn. You know, what's wrong with that? You know, it helps the kid. It helps his family.
Oh, God.
The school's not out a penny. What could go wrong with that scenario?
Hey, kid, I'm Cedric Golden. Here's $20. Can you be a Patriot? Can you sign with UT Tyler?
I bet you'd go 25.
I don't have it.
You don't?
I don't have it. I work
for
at
UT Tyler?
I work at a newspaper. I live on a budget.
You have no loyalty.
I don't have disposable income. No,
but that's my thing, is that let donors, alumni, boosters, whatever you want to call them, willingly pay for their kids and help these families and get out of these depths of poverty.
So you're saying that boosters and alumni should be allowed to give players and their parents money?
Question?
So
are they doing it anyway?
I was about to say, you know, it's only been going on for 100 years,
exactly,
Kirk.
Make it legal.
Make
just
it
like
legal.
Gambling and marijuana, make it legal, tax it.
I've got no problem with that. Got no problem with that. But then the big dogs are going to usually win that.
How do you know?
But the big dogs are going to
–
who's
got more money
bucks
than Phil Knight? You know, Oregon could be the basketball power.
Michael Dell.
Phil, you can – you know, Michael Dell, T. Boone.
T. Boone Pickens.
Oklahoma State, a very good basketball school with a lot of the tradition. It's like, well, you're helping the kids, right? I'm a serious question. We're making light of this, but what would the harm be in that? Because amateurism is such an old, outdated idea.
All it would do is it would just open the curtain up. It's been happening
it would. It'd
forever,
be reality.
And it might regulate it. I don't know, but the best players are still going to get extra benefits and perks because they're special.
Right. So just open the door, you know, and let's take a realistic approach to that, because, you know, you think we're going to see one coach banned for life for cheating?
A coach not named Rick Pitino? No.
Rick Pitino's only been coaching 500 years. So, you know, I'd love to see a young coach who get the book thrown at him and said, okay, now you can't coach anymore. Boy, that's going to end up in a courtroom.
I just don't think that's ever going to happen.
See, like I said, with most of these proposals, I don't think they're realistic, you know. Probably, like I said, the one I like is that kids that don't get drafted after declaring can come back to school.
I love that one.
That's good. And here, I would go further, Cedric. Say Snoop Roach, okay, declares for the draft. Say he goes in and signs with an agent, doesn't get drafted. Okay, I'm coming back to Texas. And Shaka says, hey, we don't have a scholarship for you. I'm sorry. And then let him go wherever he wants.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
If you don't have a scholarship for him, you have to sign a release. You have to. Let him go.
Absolutely.
That's a good idea.
You know, so. Oh, good.
Don't leave Snoop.
Okay, good.
Don't be dumb.
No.
Come back, Snoop. You're not ready.
He's got to come back, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's got to come back.
Yeah.
He's not ready.
Yeah.
That will do it for episode 96 of On Second Thought. We got to thank Danny Davis for joining us. For the Duck, I'm Sed Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Sed and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.
Amazon has everything for back to school. Zebra lunchbox? Check. Cool Adidas gear like t-shirts, shoes, and backpacks? Check. Triceratops folders and pencils? Check. Laser cat t-shirts? Check. Get your back to school shopping done now at amazon.com/backtoschool and enjoy free shipping on millions of items. No need to leave your home or hassle with crowds. Amazon.com. No better place to get everything back to school from A to Z.